Hello, and welcome to the Pocket Gamer iPhone and iPad Gaming Podcast, episode number 138. I'm your host, Will Wilson, and with me is John Jordan.
Hello, or welcome on, as I
Guten Tag. Guten Abend. Guten Abend, men Freud.
And why are you talking in this strange language today, Will?
We are in a pub. Well, we're not, actually. We're more in a bar.
That's not the reason you're talking in the strange language.
Yeah, no. that's true, actually. No, we are in a bar in Germany. We're in Cologne or Kulm or Köln.
That's not how they say it, I don't think.
That's a bit too close to the microphone, John. I'm just warning you there. That's okay. The first strike. We are in Cologne for Gamescom. It is Wednesday night. It is about 11 o'clock. We've had about 8 or 9 small beers.
But they are very small beers, I think you'll find.
Incredibly small beers. They're meant to be very fresh. I'm not sure if that's true or not. They just taste like lagers, but
small lagers.
Very small lagers, which look even smaller in my huge hands. But we have been around Gamescom today. We have very interesting people from the table next to us who keep looking around. But we have been at Gamescom. It's the press and trade day today, which means that. Yes. So what have we seen today? Because it's been the trade and press only. Despite that, it's been packed.
Apparently there are quite a lot of press and trade in Gamescom. Quite a lot of teenage entrepreneurs in Germany, we'd have to assume. There's a...
Yeah, quite a lot.
Running their own games companies, apparently.
That's weird,
CEO,
wasn't it?
CEO of a...
Also, I saw just very young children, about 7 or 6, being led around.
Well,
but, you know, they're probably there for a reason. Yes, so it's been interesting. I queued up for a game.
You queued up for quite a long time, I heard.
I queued up for an hour and a half.
It wasn't even a mobile game. It wasn't even for professional reasons.
No, I queued up for Modern Warfare 3 just purely out of fanboyism. And it took me an hour and a half. And the queue was about 10 metres long. And that possibly was the most... And some fat, sweaty German journalist kept trying to push past me, which I thought was very offensive. Being very British and all, you've got to keep the queue.
The queue needs to be one in the line, doesn't it?
So. Yeah, it's got to be one in the line. But he kept trying to push past me. I was very pissed off.
But anyway. Will, this is iPhone and iPad.
Oh, yeah. So that's just a bit of a warning for you guys going to game conventions. Don't go and see Modern Warfare 3. But, yes, so what do we see today? I saw...
Yeah, you go first. Yeah.
Who did I see? I saw a good game from Game Bakers, who are new guys.
Oh, no,
They're ex Ubisoft developers.
Well, it's a kind of a trend we're seeing more of, isn't it? That we have people who are very experienced in console game development, and for whatever reason, often they've been in a game company for maybe 5 or 6 years, and you know these big console games take maybe one, 2 years to develop, and it's. You know, a big. You're a small. Even however important you are, you're still a very small kind of cog in the overall development kind of scheme. There's maybe like 100, 200 people working on it, and they kind of get a bit bored, and they kind of think, well, let's make a game with 5 people over 6 months. Hey, we can
5 people. You're mad.
It cannot be done, but apparently it can. So yes, and the Game Makers game is.
It's a squid. It's a turn-based stretch-em-up. No, it's a turn-based strategy game.
It is a stretch-em-up, though, isn't it?
It is a stretch-em-up, yeah. You do stretch the squids and you flick them. It's quite interesting. It's kind of combining the turn-based strategy RPG with the sort of casual... sort of Angry Birds, I guess.
Angry squids?
Inky
squids?
Well, they got the whole RPG thing going on, so they've got stamina, strength, vitality, and all that, which you can upgrade between battles.
Can you imagine Angry Birds? Angry Birds, how is there not an RPG?
I know.
How does this not happen?
Precisely.
Okay.
They're missing a trick. I mean, they've got baby nappies.
Yes.
That's for people who are about to level up.
Maybe level down, I don't know.
So that was good. I thought that looked very interesting. Very nicely done. Very nicely put together. Very professional.
The artwork looks very good. I mean, those guys know how to make games that are going to cost $10-20 million, you know, dollars, and are going to make hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue. So, you know, these are people who know how to make high class games. So it's, you know, yeah. I mean, it's interesting that sometimes their kind of ideas are maybe, I mean, you know, a squid based flick 'em up is fairly surreal in a way. I mean, it's not.
That makes perfect sense to me. I mean, okay, squids normally travel through the ocean using the.
But no, it's good. I think for a long time in mobile games, you've either had kind of people making games based around kind of brands, and they've been a little bit tired often the games, but you know the brand makes it, or you've had very small inexperienced teams making games that are wildly innovative and imaginative, but often not very well presented. Whereas now we've got these kind of console teams who know how to make, you know, really well presented, very high class, very good, you know, artistic games. And I think it's adding to the overall mixture of the games we're seeing. So
also, I'd say it's pretty good fun.
Okay, well, so far I've not played it, so if it's clicking squids. And leveling them up, is it?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Also, the game's good.
That's good. But
yeah, no, I enjoyed that. I thought that was one of the good ones. The also I saw from Nival. I can't quite remember how they pronounce it.
It would be Russian. A Russian pronunciation. It would be hard. A hard N, maybe.
Are you talking to me? No, it is. No, Nival probably. But their game was good. It's King's Bounty Legends, which is currently a Facebook game. But it's coming out to iOS and Android. I know. That's for all the iOS fans out there.
A bit hardcore, little, maybe.
It's quite an interesting sort of mixture. It's got card game sort of. It's a lot like Kingdom Conquest actually. But Kingdom Conquest is based on what Ubi was doing with Might and Magic Heroes Kingdoms.
But yeah, Kingdom Conquest has done quite well. It's done like 1 million downloads. I mean, it's a free game, but I think...
A billion?
Million.
Oh, a million.
I mean, Sega are quite happy with that. So, apparently, so...
Well, I think King's Bounty's got much better graphics.
Yeah, King... Yeah.
Also, it's got a better battle system. Okay. Proper sort of developed. It's the same sort of hexagonal, if you know the PC series. Same, or indeed, if you're like me and you know an actual original game from the DOS era about 1988, then it's the hexagonal Heroes of Might and Magic style battles. Yeah, it looks interesting. They didn't have a proper running build going though,
okay. So
it was a bit buggy. They showed us a little bit on an Android tablet, and it was running like 1 frame per second. So they've still got a bit of work to go.
Yeah.
They showed another good game, and I thought it was a PC game. I felt a little bit guilty because I was sitting
there. Did you say stop?
Stop, please.
this game is not mobile.
No, alas, I played it and it was very fun.
I enjoyed it. Your PC roots were coming
my
out.
My PC roots came out. I was actually going to be late for the next meeting, but I was like, I want to play this game. But that was very good. That's called Prime World. That was good. What else do I see? This is a good one. I talked to BulkyPix.
BulkyPix?
Yeah.
The well-known French publisher?
Yes, indeed. The French publisher that isn't Gameloft.
Yeah, that's true. No, it's true.
It's true, though. Well, they're not Gameloft.
Can we call them the French Shinlingo? Is that, do you think that kind of fits?
Yes, in more ways than one. There's like two ways that it would fit.
They're not owned by EA.
They're not owned by EA.
Or owned by Gameloft. We should kind of make that clear.
That's fair enough. I saw a good game from there. Actually, I saw two good games. I saw Another World, which should be recognisable to everyone who's played on the Amiga in the past 20 years.
The Amiga? Ancient history, I think we call that.
Yeah, well, Another World's still a good game. It's actually quite interesting. They've introduced new difficulty levels to make it work on the touchscreen, so... And it's quite it's very subtle. It's not like, because the game, you can't make Another World. It's like, if you don't know what it is, I should really explain. It's a sort of cinematic, rotoscoped, very early sort of French unusual game where you play as Lester, whatever his name is.
Could we say like a slightly kind of Dragon's Lair kind of?
Sort of Dragon's Lair, but a little bit more, interactivity and a little bit more... surrealism. It's an iconic game. The forerunner for stuff like I'd say Flashback was definitely influenced by it, of course. But I'm not sure if Prince of Persia was before or after. around the same time. But yeah, anyway.
The internet with us right now.
So yeah, that's a shame. But yes, it's very good. But the difficulty levels that they've picked are quite interesting. They don't adjust like enemy damage because that wouldn't work. Because in the game, if you make a wrong decision, you get killed. But they do stuff like if you try and kick a worm on the ground, then on the hardcore mode, which is the original game, he won't bend down and extend his leg. He'll just do a really crap kick unless you press down and kick, which is the original game thing.
Okay.
But like if you do it on normal mode for iPhone, then he will actually extend his foot. It just helps you out. And there's like subtle timing differences to give you more time.
It's good.
It's looking very good. It's the 28th anniversary of it.
Oh, damn. Well, it kind of hit me as a weird anniversary. It's like Sonic's 20 years of Sonic this year.
To be fair, I can understand 20th anniversary, but 28th seems a bit of a... It's quite good as well, though, because it's done the Monkey Island thing where you swipe two fingers down to change the graphics from retro to HD.
Okay.
So you can have the original graphics as well if you're a mental fan who likes playing in like really bad resolution. But yes, they another game I saw from them, very good one. Well, it doesn't sound very good. I'm gonna make it sound really bad, but it's Globulus Mania.
Globulus has been...
It's been surprisingly been awesome.
It's a big web game, isn't it? It's a big kind of like it's a teenage
it was
web
big
kind
on
of fan base.
It's big on. It was big on. It was big on DSiWare as well.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like a party game. There's like 20 different game modes, and
it's all based on blob physics, isn't it? Or glob physics,
I suppose. Yeah.
In the French manner.
You stretch globs. You take turns to plan your stretching of globs.
It's kind of like going back to squids. It's like the French.
Yeah, it's basically the French. It's the French version of squids.
The French like to stretch things. So,
That is true. but it's really well done. It's surprisingly good in two player. We were having quite a heated competition. The game modes as well. I mean, you take turns to stretch the things, but you don't show the other person what you're doing.
Yeah.
And then you give it back your iPad or you do it online, you know. And
you can understand why those games are kind of, you know, that competitive thing and that kind of asynchronous and... And basically, they're taking lots of different types of sport, and so you do, as I remember, you have like kind of football based ones, or just kind of like bowls based ones, or you know, there's lots of different and some of them are more successful than others, but they're all based on the same gameplay.
There's a good one for football where you basically stretch three of your globs to try and kick the ball into the goal,
which is
good. And then another one where they all lay bombs where they last worse, and you've got to avoid. It's a good game.
Okay, so it's
surprisingly good.
It's one of those games that it's surprisingly deep. When you kind of, it seems to be kind of younger teenagers kind of play it, but it does have particularly kind of emergent maybe is too strong a word.
It's that sort of game. Yeah. If you're on a bus with a friend, like me and a good friend of mine, used to on like when I had my Java phone on me, which wasn't that long ago. but we used to play this crazy golf game just purely because it was like one of those pass the phone games, very quick to play, and it was like it was just easy and sort of quick and fun. This is what this one strikes me as. It seems like a very good travel two player game.
Yeah,
but you know. But it doesn't look great. But
yeah, goodbye. There are German friends there. A bit confused what we're doing in a pub with a massive microphone.
it's a proper mic. What else did I see before we go on to John, who's like literally bursting at the seams here to talk? I also spoke to XZ, who you may remember are the guys behind Catan on iPhone, Catan. Yeah.
Not on iPhone. Is it on iPhone?
Yeah, iPhone, Not Carcassonne on iPhone. That's Coding Monkeys. But they did Carcassonne on Android.
And now, it's come out on lots of platforms now, hasn't it?
Yeah, but that's XZ's version.
Okay.
Yeah. It's very complicated. It's all this German board game licensing. It's very complicated.
But it's coming to Kindle, isn't it? Are we allowed to say that? Do we not? I don't know.
I have no idea.
I'm pretty sure that Catan is coming to Kindle, which is kind of
that would
really
be interesting. That would be interesting.
Well, they were telling me the frame rate is obviously, I don't know, is it like one frame every
to be fair,
two seconds or something?
It is a board game.
Yes.
The board game's original frame rate is one.
No, because the refresh is the refresh of when you make the move, isn't it? So sure, it's not one, is it?
Well, it's not more than one a second.
No. Yeah. Okay. You're saying it's longer than 1 second. Yeah. It's at least one.
Okay.
It? Yeah. Okay. So we're getting lost in technicalities of board game dynamics or something.
Well, yes. That was fine. They told me lots of things, and then they said I can't say anything, or it's not confirmed.
Okay.
So I can't really say much. But I did talk to them about illegal downloads. I know that's a bit of an old topic.
I mean, this is something I'll maybe come on to.
All right. Yeah. I talked to him about it because of course they just released on Android, which we all know
Android.
Is like. Yeah, we all know that's the Pirate's Haven. It's basically the Port Royale of the digital mobile world. And as you can guess, loads of people are pirating it, but also on iOS. I did ask them why, have they ever thought of like introducing copy protection sort of thing that, because they can basically track the downloads, and they've asked RapidShare and stuff to stop trying to do it, but of course people just change the name.
It's a never-ending kind of debate, isn't it?
Yeah. But the most interesting thing about it was that he said that every time there's a new iPhone, their downloads go up, obviously, as you'd imagine. Lots of new iPhone users. But also, every time there's a new iOS version, their downloads go up.
Mm-hmm.
And he's putting that down to the fact that the pirate version isn't compatible with the new version of the OS.
Ah, okay.
So people are actually buying the game because they're desperate to play it.
But this is always this kind of. I guess we have to be careful. It's always like the slightly sticky issue with piracy, isn't it? That it's kind of. Clearly, the hardcore in stone scenario is every pirated game is a lost sale to the developer. That's bollocks. But there's obviously some sort of percentage that, some sort of if you're. Of a certain philosophical viewpoint, you might say 50% of pirated games are lost sales, and if you're another kind of philosophical point of view, you might say 5%. I think it's become a bit more easy with freemium games, because freemium games, why would you pirate a freemium game? It's free anyway, and then you just kind of see that within the freemium kind of ecosystem, you see pirated games is just a distribution system. And that just because they've pirated the game doesn't mean you can't then at some point charge them for something. Even if it's like an advert. I mean, you're not charging them directly for that, but you're monetizing an advert. So that's probably like a wider point that we would need a developer chap to give us the hard line on it.
They're all off. We've stayed. They've all left. Thank you.
I guess we should say to do our own little kind of advert that we were invited to the Open Faint kind of beer evening. I mean we had our own pocket gamer party last night,
and it was a massive success.
We had 250 kind of mobile movers and shakers and funny hat wearers and other
people and someone else.
Tonight we've been kind of hanging out with game developers who I think most of them have used Open. I mean, obviously Open Faint's a massive kind of network. It's like 70 million users now, or people who've used it at least once. And they had a bit of a beery knees up for their developers. So we
tagged along.
Yeah, they were. What famous developers were there? There was Tommy from Fabrication, and there was Ian from Future Games of London, and there was the
creators of Lemmings.
They were creators of Lemmings, Yo-Yo Games as they are now, but Russell and Mike, who in the day were there programming Lemmings.
They didn't create Hired Guns, but they were they were very pleased that I remembered and liked Hired Guns.
Well, they were. This is what we could probably still call the Scottish Mafia of Dundee developers.
The Dundee Massive.
I mean, I don't think Russell and Mike will be annoyed for us to say they are veterans. They are probably a good 50 years of game development experience in those two heads.
Telling me they actually asked me what age was I when I played Lemmings.
And the answer was
about 12.
Did they pat you on the head nicely?
No, but then they said they had new people on their team who had never been born when Lemmings came out, which is a bit shocking to me as well. Any child born in the 90s onwards just makes my brain go gooey.
Yes. And there were the game doctors, of course.
Zombie, oh, the game doctors.
The brothers, the Zombie Smash brothers.
Surprisingly, they look actually quite good.
No, I mean, I have to say that those Zombie Smash, it's kind of, you know, you kind of think Zombie Smash, oh, it's kind of like a zombie game, but they're a fairly small team. They've worked on that for a good 2 years. They've got really very polished.
Essentially Fruit Ninja with zombies.
Oh no, but this is the other one. That's Zombie Slash.
It's
not out yet. Yeah. I think we're probably breaking all manner of NDAs now.
Oh yeah, okay.
But it's gonna be very, gonna be very good. It's gonna be
very
good. No, we don't need to edit that, do we?
All right. Maybe. I don't know which one. I didn't play Zombie Smasher. I don't think.
No, just, I mean Zombie Smasher is a really big game. There's like the millions and millions of downloads where you're kind of picking
up
zombies.
I still don't think I played it.
Okay. Well, you've missed out. Zombie Smasher's, because they've done like a really massive content update. They've basically doubled the size of the game. But the new one is coming out, which hasn't been announced yet or anything, so we shouldn't know about it.
We didn't know about it.
It has zombies and you kind of slash them.
You slash them. It might be called something else.
but those guys were there and...
those people there.
I'm trying to think who else was there. Oh, there was there's a location-based guy. There was kind of Martin from the get it right, the IMGA, the International Mobile Game Awards.
That's where I recognise him from.
Yeah. So you've sat on those awards. You know, I sat
in the crowd.
Have you not sat on the awards yet? Oh, okay.
Well, I haven't done the. I'll be terrible if I'm on the awards
panel.
You've
not done the awards.
I'll just be pounding my fist against the table.
You're not
going
that powerful
like,
yet. Okay.
I'll be going, what? No, I am powerful. It's just I'm a bit too powerful. You've done this politics.
You would break the table.
I'm reading Game of Thrones at the moment. This is like, you know, you're all moving against me. Don't worry, Lannisters. I know what your plan is.
And then we had Connector Media. We've got a big UK kind of Android publisher.
Connector Media. I like Connector Media.
Yeah, we like Greg. He's always got a few pointy things to say about people.
He's always getting into arguments with me.
With you in particular.
Telling me that the reviews are wrong and I'm too harsh. Or my reviews are too harsh.
You've been rotten to his games.
Yeah.
And equally, it's nice. There were a few startups. So there was Lost Sock, who are just a startup developer. They're doing the first game's going to be an Android game, not coming out till next year. So they're still kind of only just really started development. And there's a guy used to work at EA Mobile in Prague, and he's got a team together, got kind of five guys. I haven't seen the game, didn't show me it, but we kind of, you know, it's kind of interesting. It's always that kind of mixture of people coming, you know, it's kind of new people and then the people who've been in it forever and know everything and still learning new stuff. So yeah.
Talking of people who've been around for a little bit.
boom.
John. No. I still have one more thing to talk about. But I don't think I can because I got people on me for that one.
You can mention it.
I can probably mention it. That's very mysterious now. I'm not gonna edit that out. It's just gonna people are on to me. I also played Shadow.
They're watching.
Yeah. Well, you know, we get a lot of emails. So I played also Shadowgun today, which I'm sure a lot of you are looking forward to. It's Madfinger Games, their next release after Samurai 2 Vengeance, which we thought I personally thought was excellent, Samurai 2 Vengeance.
Very good.
So it's a fantastic sort of little hack and slash game. So I played Shadowgun, a more recent build from E3. It looks stunning. Obviously it's still in development. There were quite a few bugs and a few missing textures, but like, you know, you kind of expect that. It's not out for at least another month or two.
It's fairly soon, isn't it? I mean, it's quite a lot riding on the, you know, it's a Unity developed game, and Unity are very behind it.
Yeah, I think I know what the bit that I can't say is.
Oh, that's the bit you can't say?
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
But, it's a bit weird recording this. I don't know what I have not got to say. Like, I've got someone saying I can't say something, and I don't know what it is. But
it's like a super injunction.
It's basically a super injunction.
You can't say that you can't say...
I'm too nice, otherwise I just spill the beans. It's nothing incredibly important, unfortunately. If it were, I'd just say it. Yeah. But it's an interesting game. I liked it. I thought it's got potential. I think the most interesting thing, actually, I mean, like, it's quite interesting just seeing what Madfinger are doing in terms of the AI. I think that's one of the most interesting parts. They've gone for an objective-driven AI system. Mm. So if you keep firing at someone when they're in cover, they will get scared and try and run to a bit of cover that's further away.
Okay.
Or they'll just fire blindly.
Yeah.
They won't. It's not a set motions. They're not set animations
or
paths.
It's not scripted.
It's not scripted. So it's quite dynamic, which I think is quite an interesting choice for them to make, because they could have easily just gone for a scripted, because it's all, you know, it's Gears of War, third-person shooter, sort of high-behind, sort of waist-height cover, which is everywhere.
Well, I guess for that game, it's, I mean, graphically it's going to be absolutely amazing, because that's... Obviously, for the technology...
It's using the very latest... I mean, it's not even out yet, I don't think, the version of Unity. I mean, they're like basically beta testing Unity.
For the gamer, the interesting thing, certainly for me, and I played it at E3. I've not played it so far this week, but it's going to be the controls, really. It's because something like Infinity Blade was obviously had the graphics, but what really made that work was how they thought about the control system. And obviously, that's not a first-person shooter, but...
You know, neither is this, to be fair.
Okay, it's a third person shooter, but yeah, okay. but it's fairly tight, it's kind of, okay, maybe could be. So, but I think often the problem with playing these games, these kind of games that aren't, you know, you're not exactly sure what the state of the build is, that obviously the kind of the graphics can improve and you understand the scenario and you understand the weapons and the kind of the enemies and stuff, but quite late in the day, things like kind of control tweaking and, you know, quite subtle things that have a massive effect on how you enjoy the game can change in the last week before release. So it's very hard for us as journalists who've, you know, been looking at something like Shadowgun for a long time and have played various builds of it. We can get an idea how good we think it's going to be, but we really can't tell. I mean, it could be, you know, that last minute they could mess it up, or they could...
The most obvious stuff is sort of like pacing and the level design and all this, because we don't, you know, on these sort of hands-on previews, you only get little snippets, really, of the game, and you get, like, bits from different areas of the game, but you never quite get the feel.
It's not, you're not playing it in context from the first level.
Also, you sat next to the developer.
Yeah.
So you're never quite sure if they're just showing you the best parts. I mean, I quite enjoyed it. I thought it was quite good. So it's still definitely very much on my radar.
Oh, no, completely. Oh, it's going to be...
It's going to be a big game.
It will certainly be, when it comes out, whether it's better than we expect, more impressive than we expect or less impressive than we expect.
Certainly,
this is the crunch time.
Yeah. Will it be better or will it be worse? Yeah, we don't know, but we can say definitely keep an eye out for it.
Absolutely.
Right, I'm done.
You're done.
See you, John.
Okay, you're off.
Yeah, I'm off.
Again, it's going to be like a Michael Jackson thing where you kind of walk away, open the door.
I might roll up a cigarette and sit next to you, just like let you talk.
But I need your caustic interjection.
Oh yeah, well here's John Jordan with his bit from Gamescom.
Not now. When I get started. So obviously Will is has kicked off the podcast and has been inaccurate as ever. It's just the way Will is. He's just. Okay. We're the little man's giving us the wind up signal. He's saying go home. It's 12:00.
Ooh. Fair dues. I thought I heard a sort of. Hello and welcome back to the. You haven't gone away.
What happened?
Yes, well, you may have noticed that the sound quality has changed. It's got better.
Is there no background hum?
There is, but only provided by John Jordan. Yes, we're now back in the hotel room after being shown out by Small Man.
He was height-wise, he was small. He was quite wide, wasn't he? He was
a fat, small man. John Jordan. Yes, so we're back in the hotel room. We've had to usher out our escorts and other hangers-on, groupies. Jeez, they were so clingy. It's crazy. I mean, the tops.
They liked you.
Yeah, well, you know. I got the magic special something. Yeah. I got the magic.
I think you just grabbed them. You wouldn't let them go, Will.
I knocked them out first. So we're back in the room. And we are now recording again for the final part of this fantastic special Gamescom podcast.
Because there's a lot of stuff we didn't really get through. It would be nice to have got through it in our German beer hall, wouldn't it?
It would have been nice. We did actually stop at an Irish pub in between getting back to the hotel.
We were waylaid
by the thrill of alcoholic beverages.
And Simon Parkin. Simon Parkin
was there. Parkin, yeah. I'm pretty sure Video Gamer was there as well. Videogamer.com. They were just all wandering around. Because the guy, one of the people there, look, I, I, Everyone follows everyone on Twitter, but one of the people there looked exactly like his Twitter picture, like to a, down to a T.
So it was a photo of him, you're basically what you're saying.
Yeah, but normally people like take it at an odd angle, but this guy was like the hair, the beard.
Okay. Well, it was. We are obviously in the middle of Gamescom, so an Irish pub that's open up
after
12 and the Barcelona Real Madrid game was on.
But we were
kind of waylaid by Simon Barkin, who was back in the day was a pocket gamer, kind of reviewer of PSP, I think mainly Japanese RPGs, and now he's flown the nest become a.
He's a big name.
He is. We like Simon Barkin.
Yeah, it's
very
good.
Impressive.
So yes, we got waylaid drinking.
But we're back again. We're going to finish off.
We're back with you guys. Yeah. Sorry about that. But John has comments that he wants to say.
Something. Yes.
Oh, I'm just going to
go. Bit tired there. Well, you're a bit tired here, and you've been in Germany for all of 27 hours
come on,
now.
Come on.
You're not tired. Okay.
He said that's tired.
But the real journalists have been here since Sunday night. So it's a slightly complicated situation. I will explain. So there's actually two shows. So there's the Game Developers Conference Europe, which has run from Monday to Wednesday, which is more of a
the cool cats call it GDCU.
GDCE.
Yeah, well, you're not cool.
I'm not cool.
Cool
no,
cats
definitely not.
Say GDCU.
And that's the same as the main GDC is in San Francisco in May in March, and then there's the
GDC me.
Now you are confusing. So the main GDC is San Francisco in March. Then there's a GDC China, which I think is in October. I've never been, but that's been going for like 3 or 4 years. And then there's a GDC used to be called GDC Austin. Because it's held in Austin, Texas, and now it's called GDC Online, and that's in
Austin, Texas.
Yeah, well, you're confusing again. You're not being very helpful. Anyway, so GDC Europe is the European kind of branch of the conference where game developers talk to other game developers about how they've made games, and they give tips about art and business and programming. So I've been there since Monday, and there's been on Tuesday there was the mobile and I think it's called actually technically called the smartphone and tablet gaming summit, so that there were talks from people on the smartphone and tablet kind of point of view. There was a
SATS.
It's not an acronym. No one got to the acronym. There was a it was an interesting talk. Something we kind of
we that have, cries out for an acronym.
Shut up. Something we kind of touched on earlier in the podcast, whereas. There was a very good talk from the CTO of Fish Labs, who obviously a well-known German developer.
Michael?
Wasn't Michael? No, the CTO, not the
CTO,
CEO.
Okay.
I can't remember who was called. It was a very Germanic name. And it was kind of interesting.
Wolfgang.
No, wasn't that Germanic?
Vladimir.
That's Russian.
Oh, that's the black. Yeah,
so anyway, he gave a talk and it was called something like Galaxy on Fire 2 HD, bringing it to the green robot, and obviously it's about bringing the iOS game to Android. A very good talk, first 20 minutes, like Android optimized for Tegra 2 chipsets.
Surely it's Tegra.
Oh, really? Tegra?
Tegra?
I don't know, that's interesting. Yeah, I don't know, maybe
Tegra.
Americans.
Sure,
anyway, so it's all about how even over iPhone 4, they've got four times the texture definition and four times the mesh density, and that was good. So the game was looked much better, and then it went on for about 30 minutes about how terrible Android was when it came to piracy. And we were talking about piracy, not on the podcast, but earlier this evening. And apparently he was saying, so even on iOS, piracy is a big issue. So like maybe 50-60% of games, because they can track through updates and other kind of things where pirates would hit the server. So 50-60% of iOS games on iOS versions of Galaxy on Fire 2 were pirated. Android 90%. And the real problem with Android.
I'm telling John to face me because he's turning away from the microphone.
No, anyway. I'm being Italian. I'm waving my face around.
He's looking exactly the opposite way of where I put the microphone. So which I can see the sound levels. You're just dropping. You're
this is
going
technical.
Like,
this is technical.
I'm just going off down okay. here. I'm just
but the really interesting thing on Android. So Galaxy On Fire 2 is a big game. It's like I think it's 200 megabytes. And obviously on the Google Market, you can only they will only host for you 50 megabytes. Hmm. So the remaining 150 megabytes
has to be downloaded.
So if your game is pirated, then you have to set up a server for people who legitimately buy your game to download the other bit. And
I'm doing the hand signals. You've never done Rainbow Six. The hand signal means look this way or that way.
I'm looking at the microphone.
But you keep going like this.
Yeah, but you keep throwing your finger. Anyway, you get it. This is all edited out. Anyway, so the weird thing is when it comes to piracy on Android, if your game is very big, you're paying for the bandwidth of people who've pirated your game for free, and are downloading the remaining large chunk of 150 megabytes of game. Anyway, so that was kind of interesting because. Obviously, that was a kind of a keynote talk. Lots of Android developers in there. Lots of people were.
Were they shocked? Did they do it?
Well, no, because I don't think
it's on Android.
I don't think it's certainly not.
Not a freemium game.
It's not a shock, but I think partly because the title of the talk was, you know, a big, you know, Fish Labs are one of the, you know, a premium developer. They've always spoken about how their games are really pushing the envelope. They're big games. They're kind of console quality games on mobile devices. And for them to, and it's kind of funny because obviously CTOs, what would be a chief technical officer, they're people who are very aware of kind of small technical issues, but they're not often the most diplomatic people in the world. So a CEO will potentially, you know, they're politicians, they're kind of negotiators. They won't get caught up in a quote that will get them into trouble. Whereas CTOs definitely are much more kind of getting stuff done, this is the problem.
CFOs will just tell you like 49 and then you'll be sat there going, what?
What's a CFO, Will?
CFO?
Yeah.
Chief Financial Officer.
Exactly. We don't talk to them.
48.
They don't talk to us.
47.
But it would have like 62. A dollar sign.
42.
Euros.
It'd be the bit in Black Ops. You'd be sat in a room with them and they'll be just like over a microphone going,
28. 16.
It's very scary. You don't want to get into a conversation with CFO.
Okay, you finished?
42.
Yeah.
42 was the secret number for the entire world.
Yeah, I know,
world,
but they know that. It. They okay. know it. They know it.
Anyway,
too well.
So I've been at GDC GDC-E. And there have been other talks. I mean, like today, again, there's another keynote talk from Richard Garriott, who I guess those of us who are...
British.
A little bit older, would know Lords British, who was behind the Ultima series, Ultima 1-9, and then Ultima Online, which was the first big multiplayer online game.
Was he behind Ultima 7? No, not Ultima 7, Ultima 8.
Yes, yeah, so, well, I don't precisely know. I mean, he was behind. I mean, because Origin, which was his studio that EA bought, did all the Ultima games. So I imagine at some point he was. Potentially
except
not
for
the
Ultimate Underworld, which is Looking Glass.
So, but I'm sure he would have had involvement in that. He may not have made it.
All right, fair enough.
I think we're straying off the subject. I think you're being slightly pedantic in this situation.
Yes, I am.
Anyway, so Lord British, Richard Garriott, who's a very famous kind of game developer.
When did Space?
Actually, a film will be out in January next year because. When he's very, very rich and wanted to go into space, so he basically paid the some money to the Russians to become an astronaut, and he had a documentary film crew following him in his bid to become an astronaut, and he was fairly old for an astronaut, I think. Then he was like 47, 48, but he had a documentary film crew following him. And
for the young listeners, imagine World of Warcraft before World of Warcraft. That's what Ultima Online was, and that's what his big baby.
Ultima Online was the first big online game where you could play, you know, together with a large number of people. Most of whom you didn't know,
You could own a house.
Well, yeah, and it was the first game where you could own currency, and you know, it was the first kind of game where you had problems with like gold mining, and was that a good thing or a bad thing? Or and actually, I mean, the weird, I mean, the one thing he did very well in Ultima Online is you know, it was the first game, and actually, this is what came out in his keynote, that it was like Farmville before Farmville, because you basically chose a trade, so you could become like a fisherman, and your job, and basically all you did in the game was to fish, and then you sold the fish, and then you got gold, and then you built your house, or you were a blacksmith and you did blacksmithery things, or you were, you know, it wasn't like a World of Warcraft, it wasn't like a combat game. So there,
well, to be fair,
I mean, there was, yeah, it kind of developed.
I remember my experience of online was going online and getting raped by like loads of people in very massive armor.
Yeah.
And then when you got back to your body again, you got raped by them because they were standing beside you. It was a bit like a perpetual death motion.
Yes.
And then when you finally logged out and then logged back in again, the same thing would happen again. Some other bastard in armor would come up to you and just go, "All right, mate." And then, well, they wouldn't say that, they'd just kill you. And then you just spend the whole of your game in your ghost form looking for your body, which got killed by some bastard.
It's not very nice, is it?
It's not very nice.
But it was
it's a bit like the real world. Too much like it for me.
It was the first game in that kind of, yeah, they were learning what to do. But it was interesting. So and Richard Garrett, as he was involved with NCSoft, which is obviously another big kind of online game company, and did a game called Tableau Russo, which wasn't particularly successful, and then he kind of came out of games for a while. But now he's back with a new games company, and he's pretty much focused on mobile games, and he's looking to kind of take the things he's learnt from things like Ultima Online and kind of community and so he's come back to, and he's it's interesting because the first game, he has a big plan as these kind of successful, clever millionaire chaps tend to have, to do like another big kind of virtual universe, which I think will be on mobile devices and potentially web as well. But his first game is it's called Universal Collector, and it's effectively taking the kind of Farmville style collecting mechanic and applying it to kind
space.
Of objects. No, it's very simple. It's kind of like a collecting game, and it has like a trading element, so you can kind of trade objects you don't want with your friends.
Can I battle my pot against your kettle?
No, battling. Okay. I think it's a very, I guess what they would call in the industry, a very kind of like a version
pacifist game.
No, they would call it like a version like 0.9. Oh, right. It's not like a, it's not even a beta, but they're basically putting something out there to kind of see what the audience think, and then they've got like 3 or 4. Or 5 other games planned. So that's kind of interesting. I mean, I think the good thing about shows like GDC is that it's a little bit better than going to like a U2 gig and going, "Well, there's Bono." I mean, it's a little bit more like, you know, you're in a fairly small environment with these, you know, and some of them have, you know, obviously some of them have made like massively popular games that sold really well, and some of them, like Richard Garrett, have done it for, he's 50 now, so he's done it for like 25 years. And, you know, they might have had the odd kind of failure, but, you know, you kind of feel like you're kind of getting to understand a little bit of the kind of man behind the game and a little bit of the kind of thinking that they've done. They are fairly open. You could, if you bump into them, you can go up and, I mean, it's difficult because of the busy men and they're catching planes home and stuff, but you can kind of. So I've been doing a bit of GDC-ing, and then today kind of Gamescom kicked in. So, but again, going back to the kind of legends and veterans of the games industry, they're certainly in the UK, people will know John Hare. I mean, he's a, you know, Sensible Soccer,
Cannon Fodder.
I mean, these are golf. These are very famous kind of games of the mid 90s. That
Cannon Fodder 2.
Did Cannon Fodder 2 have? Excuse me. Anyway,
Sensible World of Soccer.
That
game was awesome. Sensible Soccer.
Sensible
World of Soccer was even.
Well, to be fair, I think I could have said John Hare, Sensible Soccer, and Cannon Fodder, and people would have understood. You didn't just say Cannon Fodder 2 and Sensible World of Soccer. I mean,
Sensible World of Soccer was the better game, though.
Yeah.
Sensible International. Sensible Soccer. That was wrong.
Anyway, so I met up with John Hare, who's a fairly famous game developer in the UK, and is now making games for mobile devices with Tower Studio, and he also has a kind of, I guess, a partner developer, we call them Vivid Games, who are based out of Poland.
Speedball.
So, and actually, they both, yeah, so the biggest game they've just done with Speedball, and actually, Speedball's coming out, not really part of this podcast, but Speedball's coming out for PSP Minis, so that'll be available for PSP and PS3, I think, this week. But I don't want to talk too much about his new game, because it's kind of a working title, and it's maybe got, like, maybe three months to go, probably. But it's interesting that, you know, John Hare is seen as a fairly hardcore type kind of games guy. Okay, he's a bit of a veteran, and he's been successful.
He also comes from my hometown.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, I was born in Cambridge, but the town I grew up in, Saffron Walden, which is where Sensible Software are based.
Mm. Saffron Walden is a very, very tiny little village in the middle of nowhere.
So the Ferraris did stick out. No, seriously, did it?
Okay. So, but anyway, he's got a new game, and it's yeah, it's certainly not what I would have expected John to come up with. It's kind of like an anagram-based game. That's kind of interesting because Denki Games, who are a Scottish games company, kind of again fairly well known, fairly veterans in their own rights, kind of came out of DMA Design, who did the GTA games, and they've got a game called Quarrel, which is also an anagram-based game, kind of anagram and risk. That's their game dynamic. I mean, this one's much John Hare's one is much more anagrams and almost educational. It's kind of anagrams and exploration, so you're kind of exploring parts of the world, and you're kind of like solving anagrams to kind of travel around the world, and you're kind of unlocking photographs of different kind of wildlife and things. And it's kind of, you know, I mean, it's to say, still fairly not early. I mean, it's kind of gameplay wise it's there, but it's some bugs, and they really got to focus on the kind of the flow, I guess, of the game and how people get into it. But no, that was it. Yeah, I was surprised. That's kind of, it was good to be surprised, isn't it? And who else did I see? I saw another game company who've been around for again, I think 1995. So that's good, getting on for kind of 16 years. Housemarque, who I think you'll be seeing tomorrow as well.
Yeah, how did you see them today? I didn't see that in your chart.
Yes, you did.
No, I didn't.
Okay, so Housemarque, who I think they claim with due justification that they are the oldest Finnish games company. So they're based in Helsinki, and they come out of there as a lot of Finnish companies do, came out of the kind of the demos, PC demo scene. And I guess the most famous recently for the Super Stardust games they've been doing for the PSN network. So, you know, I mean, really great games. But now, I guess, as lots of these studios are, I mean, they're fairly small. I think they're like about 30 guys now. And they're seeing kind of something like iPad 2, you know, iOS, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it's, the power there is so good, and the quality of games they can come up with. So they've, I mean, like many people on iOS, they've got a physics based kind of game. It's kind of, again, a working title, so I kind of won't say kind of what it is, 'cause it might confuse people. But it's a bit like kind of like the we've seen quite a few games in this kind of genre. So it's like the Incredible Machine kind of cases, contraption kind of physics based thing where you're placing things.
You're basically spoiling what I'm going to see tomorrow, right?
Yeah, but when you see it, you'll be, it's kind of,
all right. Okay.
It's not, the podcast is not for your benefit, Will. It's kind of a,
well, it is.
Okay, it is. Okay.
This one, Will. I wonder what happens tonight.
But it's kind of, it's interesting. It's like in a very small amount, there's like a Lemmings element to it as well, and you're kind of, it's kind of physically, you're kind of firing stuff around, you're placing objects, you're kind of tapping to move interactive dynamic objects. So yeah, that was kind of good to see. I mean, they're a good studio, and I think this is their first time with iOS, and they've got a few other ideas as well. Who else I've seen? Yo-Yo Games, going back to the veterans who were
the
DMA guys again. So they made a brilliant game. So I guess they're best known on iOS for They Must Be Fed, which I think I reviewed this year, maybe.
Karoshi.
Yes, Mr. Karoshi as well. Yeah, yep. We've done a few games. And we've actually been chatting to them tonight. They're kind of like a publishing company. So people who make games with the package called Game Maker, which is a fairly simple drag and drop kind of 2D game development tool. But now it supports iOS, Android, PSP minis, and now they've got a kind of Mac as well, and Mac PC web. Flash stuff, but also they're big push into HTML5. So we've been talking to them, and that's kind of a journalistic thing we'll be following up on with HTML5. But they've just announced There's an update to They Must Be Fed, which is another. Let's right. Four worlds, eight worlds levels.
Eight levels in each world.
32 levels.
Yeah.
Which is almost doubling the original size of the game.
Apparently, they're a lot harder.
And they're
the
really. We were. Our eyebrows went up, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah. Because the original worlds are hard.
It's a weird game, isn't it? Because the levels were never like massive. They're always.
It was quite constrained. It's just the whole aspect of jumping and changing the gravity fields. I can never quite get my head around it.
Because you have to time it. You can't think about it. You have to kind of like know. It kind of it's
you
intuition,
start thinking
isn't it?
About the fact that you want to have to flip around and then you're on that surface on that side, then everything goes wrong.
So for those of you who don't know, I mean, you should definitely check the game out. It's like 99 cents. So you know the cheapest thing.
69p.
69p. Yeah, 79 euro cents.
79 euro cents.
Yeah, and you're. And basically, you're kind of like a little kind of like weird little kind of a like kind of character, and you kind of jump into this world, and there's basically kind of spheres that are moving around and squares, and basically you kind of just press a button and you kind of just jump forward in a gravity.
It's a bit like that bit on Mario Galaxy.
Yeah, but in 2D. I mean, it's 2D, very simple 2D. Yeah. But it's kind of like a very, you can die very easily. It's like if you there'll be like a. Like a square, you know, so a four-sided square, obviously in 2D, moving, and like two of the sides will have big spikes on them, and if you even touch one of the spikes, you'll blow up, and then
if you miss time a jump, that's where it gets really bad because of course you miss time it, so you don't get quite to the gravity of the next object.
Yeah.
So then you find yourself flipping around the object you're on.
You're kind of like,
and then
of course
two sides of spikes, and then you just go, rah, what the hell? Yeah, it's a good game. It's a very good game.
No, it's only and the art again. It's very kind of simple.
Nice.
It's that kind of less is more kind of thing. It's very simple. Anyway, so it's good to see those guys. Yeah. So
Well, before we go though, I mean, I should do a quick what we've been playing, but it's mainly going to be me.
Okay.
It's going to be mainly me because I mean we already talked about what we've been playing here.
Well, exactly.
I should really give a bit of a shout out to a game I played last week in reviews, and I'm sure you've all seen it. I'm quite quiet. Hang on. Let me move.
What have you seen, Will?
Let me move a bit closer.
Come on.
Yes, so I reviewed last week Anomaly Warzone Earth.
Oh, and everyone's been waiting for this, but it's been like a good
it's been about a
6 months.
No, it's been about a year. Yeah,
no,
yeah.
we kind of thought it might, in 6 months, we kind of thought it might be released, and we've been waiting.
Yeah, and then we've been waiting for that, yeah. But it's a very good game. Very good, in fact. Very, very good.
Is it very, very good?
Yeah, I gave it a 10, which is my first ever 10 out of
10. Oh, is it? Mm. Excellent.
So I've broken my virginity in that regard.
You are a man.
I'm a
my
man
son.
Now. Buy it. There you go. That's my review. No, it's very good. It's a real-time strategy game. Tower
reverse.
Offense. Well, no, it's still a real-time
offense,
strategy
again.
It's just very well done. It's great. It's a good idea. But it's the execution that really, really counts. It's very tactical. It's very much on the minute, thinking on your feet. Very good level design. It mixes up. So you're going through the corridors against enemy towers, but you have some missions where you're escorting ground units. There's some missions where you're escorting a plane, which can, of course, shortcut while you can't.
Okay.
So you've got to plan around that. And there's one brilliant mission where you've got artillery strikes against you, and you can see how long your troops will take to get out of the artillery zones and how long it'll take for the artillery zones to hit. And you've got, but of course, you take the shortest route, you're not going to win. It's very well done. It's really easy to play. It's completely natural for touch controls. There's 15 levels. Each one of them introduces something new. Lots of different tower types, lots of different unit types. It's just really well done. It's like, it's very hard to think of how they could have improved it. I guess the only way you could say they could have improved it is that hardcore difficulty isn't hardcore. I could.
It's not hard enough.
It's not. It's probably not hard enough for the RTS veterans. If you want like a game which you'll lose if you take even a millisecond too late, because there are some people that like that.
Yeah.
But I guess that's the only thing. Because I think the normal difficulty is perfectly pitched. If you make a mistake, you know you made a mistake. I would say another negative is that it checkpoints regularly. So if you lose a unit. And you get to a checkpoint,
right,
then you're gonna have to restart. But the levels don't take any longer than 3 minutes anyway. So, it's not really much of a problem. And there's, but once you complete the 15 levels, there's like a wave-based game mode. There is a version where you go back through the 15 levels and you get separate objectives. I mean, it's, and it looks great.
And look, I was, graphically wise, it's amazing.
Graphically, it's brilliant.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Amazing.
And there's not really much I can put other than that. I just say, yeah, 10 out of 10. No hesitation on my part. I said it was going to be very good last week, but I wasn't sure if it was going to be very good or good because I was only like halfway through the game.
It's almost one of those weird ones where you kind of, you know, and going back to kind of like,
you've got to wait to see what it does.
It's like Shadowgun. You really hope it will fulfill.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen so much of it, and we've seen like people have had hands on, and we've
I had hands on it before, but you don't know if it's going to be really good. I mean, like, I couldn't say it was going to be a 10 out of 10 game unless I completed it, unless I went through it, you know, sat down properly, gave it like a. It takes about 3 hours to play for, I'd say.
Okay.
But of course, there's medals as well, so you can go back and do that. Mm. And it's just a really good game. It's very well done. I mean, like every single, like I said, every single mission is something new, which I think that's it never overstays its welcome. I think that's one of one of the reasons why people like Mario games so much, is that the levels they always introduce something new, a new element to the basic level design.
Yeah.
But it never overstays its welcome, and that's exactly what they've done here. But yeah, it's really good.
Good.
Definitely get it. 10 out of 10. Boom. And it's like a pound or two. Honestly, you should have bought it by now. What the hell are you playing at? Anyway, it's very good. What else have I been playing? I have played another game.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. No, I should do this one, actually. Puerto Rico.
Ah!
Yeah, HD.
One another one that you're kind of...
Yeah, I got into an argument
with Rita. Your board game kind of...
Yes, indeed.
Conversion, is that right? Really?
Yeah, it's a conversion rather than a port, but... Well, you should know I'm a reasonably big board game fan. I don't play the really mental ones where people like sit around in groups of six and play them for 8 hours. We did try and play one of those. And I will.
Did get a bit boring. You'll fall out with your friends.
Incredibly boring. Oh no! It was by the end of the game. We didn't actually finish the game.
Okay.
We decided that enough was enough, and we packed it away. That's how much I hate those long board games. Anyway, Puerto Rico though, very good board game. I got in a slight argument with one of the readers about it, but I still stand by my review. It's a 6 out of 10. In terms of, is it a good board game? Yes, it is. I'd give it probably an 8 or a 9.
Hmm.
Just based purely on if it's a good board game.
Yep.
Is it a good iPad board game? No. Hmm. They've done a decent job of trying to bring it to the iPad, as in it works. It has the features. It has Game Center support, around the ball multiplayer, and different levels of AI. What it doesn't do very well is present the game in a way that's appealing to people who haven't played the board game. And in fact, it took me an hour to get my head around it.
Could you kind of think? I mean, that's kind of obviously the people who
they've tried very hard.
It's a famous board game, but I've not played it as a board game. But maybe, you know, I've played a few. You know, kind of like this.
To be fair, I mean,
a few of those games I've tried out on iPad, and you kind of want to get in them in an approachable manner.
It's a harder than Catan or Carcassonne, and the internal team, because it's what's the name of the publisher? It's sort of slightly German, in fact, Brandesburg or something like that. Mm-hmm. But they're digital components. I guess it's their first game, but they've done a reasonably good job. I mean, they know that the game's complicated. You can almost feel it. They've got an almanac. They've got a tutorial. Okay. Mm. They've got another tutorial, which I only just found like about 2 hours in. And as the reader pointed out, there is a question mark thing which you can press and then highlight different things, which isn't intuitive at all because I didn't find it in like 3 or 4 hours I was playing it. I mean, it's in the bottom of the screen, but when you've gone through 3 different tutorial screens, you don't know if the question mark is actually going to be worth it. Anyway, so yes, they try very hard, but the graphics are poor. It's all messy. They try and fit too much in one screen. It's a game that cries out for, sadly, a 3D board view, really.
Okay. Hmm.
Just go back to basics. Don't try and force everything in, because that's what it feels like. And for even for me, who's played the game quite a lot, it was just a bit confusing.
Mm.
because it's just all this information on the screen, and it's just it's not very well laid out.
I guess maybe it's one of those ones where the developers are just so close to the project that they can't take the view of someone who's never played it or never doesn't know anything about it, and just lay it in that kind of obvious 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 set.
Yeah, it's a tricky balance for this because it's like, you know, it's a reasonably complicated game, and and it's one of those games where if you get past that initial hump, then you will really like it. And I think that's one of the things that I knew that when I posted that review, I knew I'd get someone saying that I'm wrong. Mm. Because once you do get past it, it's a very good game. And then you'll forget that actually the first hour was spent going, what the hell is this? Why can't I? What does that do? But you can't forget that when you're reviewing a game.
No.
So, and also, 6 means if you're a fan of the genre, you'll like it. And if you're a fan of board games, and if you are a fan of board games, you should know Puerto Rico, and you'll probably like it. I mean, you will. You'll get over it, you'll go past the hour, and then you'll post an angry comment about my review, saying, why did it get 6 out of 10? This deserves an 8. But I don't review the board game. I review the iPad game. 6 out of 10.
Okay.
It's close to 7, but no.
But no.
No, no cigar.
No seven cigars.
No tobacco ship from this port. Yeah.
Well, that's that's done now. We're kind of
I should link to the end. Yeah.
You got
to
do a funny.
I was talking, I was damn it.
What you done?
Absentmindedly scratching my ankle.
Oh, we shouldn't do that.
Yeah, I shouldn't do that. I've got an infected ankle. Yes, we don't have any adverts this week.
Oh, hey! Although
you might have one next week. I've been told by the ad boys.
There might be one.
There might be one again. And I don't even know.
Do your funny voice, Will. Go on. They might want a funny voice.
I'm not going to do a funny voice.
Oh, okay.
Too tired. It's like 2 a.m.
It is. It is late.
And that's German time, which means it's 1 a.m.
We've got to get up early again tomorrow. And
yes, I do. I've got it all over again. I'm talking to Gameloft tomorrow morning. And then
yeah, you've got a big day.
A big day ahead of me.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, but we will be back again next week. I hope you enjoyed this slightly chaotic
Gamescom special. Once in a while, you kind of curveball, as our American chums call it, isn't it?
Yeah, you pitch a curveball.
I don't know what happens with the curveball. Do they hit it harder or something?
They
get a strike. Is that good? Is that like
three
like
strikes?
10-pin bowling?
3 strikes and you're out. But if you get 3 outs, that's the end of the inning. But you got 9 innings. But if you're not got enough runs by the end of the 9 innings,
you fall over.
You tie and then you got to go into overtime.
And then does the fat lady sing?
Well, you got to step up to the plate. That's when you got to step up to the plate.
Because the fat lady needs probably a plate full of food or something.
Yes.
It's been a long day.
So, well, thank you very much for putting up with us for this amount of time. And we bid you good night.
And we'll talk to you more normally.
More normally next week. No doubt we'll have Keith and...
Oh, Keith will be back. Yes. Refreshed from
his holiday. I'm on holiday soon, you know.
You're on holiday as well?
Yeah, or soon.
Not next week.
Last week of August. I'm on holiday.
Not next week.
It's not next week.
Okay.
I'm just warning you now.
We'll just hold that thought.
What are you going to do without me there? Last time I was
on
holiday. The dancing
girls. We're getting...
Last time I was on holiday, I came back from holiday to record the podcast.
Did you?
Yeah, I wasn't actually away on holiday.
You're a trooper. Yeah,
thanks. Well, you know, maybe we'll bring someone else in to host.
We'll replace you.
Ah. anyway, yes, thank you very much. We will see you next week.
Bye.
Good night.